Welcome to Native America Calling from Studio 49 in Albuquerque. I'm Tara Gatewood. Taking care of someone with dementia comes with stress, and a large part of it often falls on family members. Depending on the circumstances, it can turn into the equivalent of a full-time job, even a 24-hour-a-day responsibility. Our guest today will tell us what family members of a loved one with dementia can expect in terms of giving care. In this hour, we'll also hear about ways caregivers can take care of themselves, too. We'll hear more right after National Native News. Stay with us.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. People gathered at City Hall in Cleveland, Ohio Monday, calling for the city to recognize Indigenous Peoples Day and drop the Columbus Day holiday. Members of the Native American community rallied with a group of council members urging for the change. The Lake Erie Native American Council is joining in support of a proposal to designate the day. Not all city council members in Cleveland are backing the move. The non-binding resolution by Councilman Bashir Jones now goes to the city council for debate. Other cities in the state already celebrate Indigenous Peoples Day on the second Monday in October. A group of Democratic senators plan to take the Senate floor Tuesday afternoon to draw attention to violence against Native women and the need to pass key legislation. Senator Tom Udall, vice chair of the Indian Affairs Committee, will lead back-to-back speeches. The senators are seeking the reauthorization of the Violence Against Women Act, which includes tribal provisions to protect Native women. The speeches follow Sunday's National Awareness Day on missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls. An Alaska Native community of 800 people is gaining ground to become a top cruise ship destination. That follows heavy investment by the local village corporation, which has transformed a defunct seafood cannery into an entertainment complex. Jacob Resnick reports.
Executives from Norwegian Cruise Lines visited Huna to participate in the groundbreaking of a second cruise dock designed for the company's two megaships deployed to Alaska. Senior Vice President Howard Sherman says that Huna's beautiful setting and thriving Alaska Native culture is what convinced its corporation to invest.
This isn't just another destination. It's the culture and the people that make it special. And you can't buy that authenticity. You can't build it. You can't put it in a t-shirt shop. You know, you can't put it in a jewelry store. So, you know, we are so excited and so honored to be a part of this, and I thank you.
Huna elder Kenny Grant says there are deep ties to the forested uplands that will be the site of a cruise ship dock starting next year.
To us, this land has a spirit, and we're going to treat it properly.
Early on, cruise visitors numbered in the thousands, but this season will bring more than 250,000 passengers on 137 ships. The second dock adds even more capacity. By the time it's done, the destination could see upwards of 400,000 cruise visitors a season. That made some Huna elders at the ceremony uneasy. Stuart Mills works as a seasonal bear viewing guide. He's worried that bringing in too many people could dilute what Huna has to offer.
See, our town's only 800 people. So we get 5,000 people on this ship and 5,000 people on that ship, that's 10,000 people. We're going to have buses running everywhere, people running everywhere, and it kind of might hinder us because of the fact that we won't have enough for all the excursions for people to do what they want to when they come here.
The Village Corporation is mindful that feelings are mixed here. When the project was announced in December, the Village Corporation said it would hold public meetings in the winter. That didn't happen. Huna Totem CEO Russell Dick says they still hope to do public outreach later in the year, but he believes history won't judge its organization by its profit margins alone.
Because if it did, we're no better than any other company out there.
Reporting in Huna, I'm Jacob Resnick.
The names of three officers have been added to the Indian Country Law Enforcement Officers Memorial Monument at the Federal Law Enforcement Training Center in Artesia, New Mexico. A recent ceremony honored fallen officers Nathan Graves, Curtis Blackbird, and Joel Townsend. More than 100 tribal, state, local, and federal officers are listed on the memorial. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
N- National Native News is produced by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
From northern Minnesota, Red Lake Nation Foods is pleased to support this show and share the bounty of the harvests, wild rice products, and wild fruit jams, jellies, and syrups produced by American Indians and available at redlakenationfoods.com. Support by Ramona Farms, offering wholesome and delicious foods from our heirloom crops as our contribution to a better diet for the benefit of all people. We are honored to share our centuries-old farming and culinary traditions online at RamonaFarms.com.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
This is Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood. Caring for someone with dementia takes a lot of emotional and physical work. There are rewards, but it can be a frustrating and stressful process. Perhaps your person with dementia may have a habit of walking out the front door, or you found the stove burner left on, or maybe you've answered the same question for the fifth time in an hour. This is the reality for many who are caring for a loved one with dementia. Especially for Native Americans, elders are cherished, and taking care of them is important. One study from 2016 found Native Americans are among the groups that have the highest rates of dementia. And while Native Americans statistically have shorter lifespans, studies show Native elders are living longer, increasing the chances of dementia. Today we have some experts with us today who will share ways caregivers can take care of loved ones with dementia and at the same time take care of themselves and why even that's important. Phone lines are open. If you're caring for someone with dementia, give us a call. Tell us about the challenges you face, maybe even some celebrations. The number is 1-800-996-2848. And today we're going to start off in Cherokee, North Carolina, saying hello to Dr. Blythe Winchester. She is the certified medical director at the Solly Care Center and a geriatrician. She is an enrolled member of the Eastern Band of Cherokee. My pleasure to have her here with us. Dr. Winchester, thank you for being on the line.
Thank you so much for having me.
And I understand you just simply prefer Blythe. So Blythe, thank you. And before we start, you know, talking more about what happens with those who are caring for their person, let's talk a little bit about the signs of dementia and exactly what it is. Help us do some of this base work.
So dementia is an umbrella term, and it basically means that someone is having brain changes that are affecting them on a regular basis. They're having problems with memory, problems completing tasks they're used to doing. There are several different, you know, criteria that you can think of, but one of the most common questions I get is, what is the difference between Alzheimer's and dementia? So I think it's important to understand that Alzheimer's is a type of dementia, and it is the most common type. There are other types, including vascular dementia, which is as a result of having issues with the blood vessels that go to the brain as a result of a stroke or diabetes. And then there are other types of dementia, like frontotemporal and Lewy body. But ultimately, dementia is an umbrella term that covers all of these types of changes.
And so when you start working with caregivers, what kind of questions do you ask them?
So a lot of the times we'll use something called a Zarit, Z-A-R-I-T, scale, which kind of asks some questions about caregiving and what's going on a day-to-day basis, so it can give me a better idea of what the needs are and how much stress the person may be experiencing. But a lot of times if it relates to an individual patient, I will ask, you know, the caregiver if there are certain behaviors that their family member is having that are abnormal or that are distressing, or that the person is having trouble dealing with at home, because if you've cared for one person with dementia, you've cared for that one person. Everybody is different as they experience the disease process. So it's important to kind of get some specifics about what's happening and what the caregiver needs assistance with, because we tend to use very creative out-of-the-box thinking to try to come up with solutions and pointers and recommendations for things they can do at home to keep everyone safe and have a high quality of life.
And Blythe, let's talk a little bit about, you know, some of the things that caregivers go through, especially if this is all new to them. And something that I think is really important to stress is it might work right now, but maybe it isn't going to work, different approaches an hour from now, but then it'll work again a day later. And sometimes that's hard for people to wrap their head around, that sometimes these approaches change, and sometimes it's just reading the moment. Let's open that up. Go ahead.
That's absolutely correct. And, you know, when you bring that up, I just have to say thank you to any of you caregivers who are out there, you know, who are listening. You are the reason why we can continue to develop these kinds of programs and recommendations, because I've encountered so many amazing, you know, caregivers in the years I've been in practice that they teach us just as much as we try to help them. The disease process is complicated, and just like you said, things change over time. They can change day to day. They can change hour to hour, minute to minute. And so when we're going over different things that we can try, it is important to say sometimes we do have to try these different approaches multiple times. The brain has things that are happening to it, you know, in terms of the plaques that build up and make the brain unable to communicate. The brain is shrinking itself. People with late-stage dementia have a brain that's often one-third the size of someone who doesn't have dementia. So I think it's important to think about the behaviors that may happen, the personality changes, you know, the wandering, the difficulty in performing daily activities are happening because of all these things that are occurring, you know, in the brain. I have caregivers sometimes that will be very surprised and concerned because their family member is making up stories. You know, they're like, they go around and tell people, you know, that I beat them and I don't do that, and they're horrified. And unfortunately, that can be something that happens with dementia, that they can have what's called confabulation. And so I think it's the first step is for caregivers to get education and learning. And that's what I try to do, is to try to help them understand the different things that can happen behavior-wise with dementia, because sometimes it can be comforting to understand that that may happen and also give some pointers about how to deal with that.
All right. Thank you for that. With us today, Dr. Blythe Winchester. If you got any questions for her, you can give us a ring, 1-800-996-2848. And if there are any caregivers of people with dementia, you can give us a call. Tell us a little bit about what it's like to care for your person, 1-800-996-2848. Maybe you've hit some speed bumps, or you are looking for a new approach to help your loved one live a healthier life. You can call in and share in that way too, 1-800-996-2848. And Blythe, talk to us a little bit more about maybe even resetting your mindset about being a caregiver. What are some of the critical things that you would like people to know heading into this journey?
Well, so it's something that's very important to me, is this issue of framing. And framing is the language and the way that you talk about different illnesses and diseases. And I think framing is very important with Alzheimer's disease or any other dementias. So often you'll hear from organizations that aren't aimed particularly at Indigenous people, they tend to talk about Alzheimer's as a terminal disease and it's progressive and all of the things that you lose. And what I prefer to focus on is trying to emphasize, you know, what the person is retaining, how they can still be productive, the feelings and the things that they can still experience, the way life can be positive. And we have heard that from caregivers as well. It's the reason that when I ask them questions on that Zarit scale, that I don't use the term caregiver burden, because caregivers in Indian country have said, look, our family members, this person is not a burden to me. I just want to know how to make things better and how to do this better. So it's just like I said before, that caregivers are the ones who are in charge of this, and they are the ones who tell us what they need. And so I think using the language that is appropriate for this is one of those things to help caregivers, to emphasize, look, we can help you. We can provide, you know, resources, different pointers, different things to try, and different things for you to do to help yourself even, because we know that being a caregiver on a regular basis, especially 24 hours a day, can cause physical changes for that person. It can cause also mental changes, you know, everything from anxiety to depression to heart disease. So we also, you know, want to make sure that the caregivers understand that paying attention to themselves and making sure that they're caring for themselves is really important in this process.
Indeed. And the last thing that anybody wants is burnout to happen. And, you know, this was a really critical conversation that happened last week while I was attending the Association for Healthcare Journalists about burnout. And some of these caregivers, you know, they're given everything and then they're really, you know, burning that candle to the end. And the last thing we want is that flame to go out or that passion for caring for these loved ones. A lot goes along with that. And Blythe, when you think about the many things that you wish you could just give to healthcare workers or caregivers to just kind of maybe help them meet that turn in the road, I'm sure you have a lot of advice. We've got about a minute before break. What's one of those critical things you would like caregivers to know right now?
So other than what I mentioned before, which is, you know, try to get educated, try to learn some things about what can happen with this disease and your family member. The second thing that I've already mentioned is really making sure that you take advantage of whatever resources there are so that you can care for yourself, even if it's getting respite care from local agencies so that you can go out and go to the grocery store or take a minute to do the things that you need to do, because we know that that's very important in preserving your own health and avoiding burnout. And I have countless conversations with people about, you know, trying to accomplish this, whether it's a family member schedule for caregiving or whatever it is, but make sure that you also take advantage of your healthcare team. Wherever you're at, communicate with your healthcare provider, with social workers in your area, whatever aging resources you have, whether it's a senior center or a Title VI. Don't be afraid to seek out all of the different available resources, because in Indian country, a lot of times we do have those great resources, but you may not know that they're there.
All right. We'll continue with our conversation here. You can join us too, 1-800-996-2848. Maybe you're somebody who helps the caregiver to make sure that they are also staying on track, or even eating healthy, getting enough sleep, or even just being there for support. You have big ears for them when it gets tough. You can share your thoughts too, maybe some advice you have for caregivers. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. We look forward to your calls and your tweets too. You can tweet them directly to us at 1-800-99-NATIVE. And we'll continue the conversation coming up right here on Native America Calling. The Federal Office for Victims of Crime is in the process of doling out $100 million to support crime victims in Native America. The money goes to tribal services like counseling, transitional housing, and emergency services. Join us for the next Native America Calling as we talk about how victims of crime cope and what resources are available for them.
Smoking gave me COPD, which makes it harder and harder for me to breathe. I have a tip for you. If your doctor gives you 5 years to live, spend it talking with your grandchildren. Explain to them that your grandpa's not going to be around anymore to share his wisdom and his love. I haven't figured out how to do that yet. I'm running out of time.
COPD makes it harder and harder to breathe and can cause death. You can quit. For free help, call 1-800-QUIT-NOW. A message from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
Niska, oh Niska, dandi magagwito ta, sawanok, oh sawanok, igoti manna iwigya, muswa, oh muswa, dandi magagwito ta, sagawe, o sagawe, yegoti mana iwigia, yegoti mana, yegoti mana.
This is Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood from Isleta Pueblo, and we are talking about caring for someone with dementia today. The American Association of Retired Persons offers some tips for avoiding caregiver burnout. They include giving yourself a break, staying organized, and joining a support group. If you care for someone with dementia or Alzheimer's disease, call us and share how you cope. The number is 1-800-996-2848. And with us today, we've been talking with Dr. Blythe Winchester. She's the Chief Clinical Consultant of Geriatrics in Palliative Care at the Indian Health Service. My pleasure to have her here with us. And we're going to also add to the conversation by going to Duluth, Minnesota, to say hello to Dr. J. Neil Henderson. He is the Executive Director of the Memory Keepers Medical Discovery Team at the University of Minnesota Medical School. He is a voting member of the Choctaw Nation of Oklahoma. Our pleasure to have him here as well. Neil, welcome.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
And Neil, just want to give you a moment too. You know, if there's any thing that you would just like to share about how important it is that we are also supporting the caregivers of people with dementia. Anything you want to start with?
Yes, there is a combination effect of caregiver well-being and stress moderation that is connected to the way in which the affected person in the household is being provided with care. And one way to look at it, and I'm borrowing this from the Savvy Caregiver Project, which Dr. Ken Hepburn developed and his team. He is now at Emory University, but I and a team of other people have created the Savvy Caregiver for Indian Country. And a central theme that cuts across all of the caregiver training is the effort to achieve for the affected person a feeling of contented involvement. So this person is having trouble with memory. They're often confused. And the ways in which the caregivers recognize the abilities and the capabilities of this person is connected with the ability to achieve contented involvement for the affected person. And if the affected person then is not upset and agitated and confused, the caregiver or the caregiving group is going to experience less stress as well. And that requires them to adjust their caregiving strategies and their caregiving efforts in correspondence to the affected person's changes over time, because it is characteristic of the dementias that the person will have changes that are manifest as increasing limitations. And so the caregiver can learn how to adjust the caregiving strategies to best achieve the slightest amount of frustration for both people, the caregiver and the affected person.
And it can get real heavy at times. Neil, give me an example of this in play.
A caregiver that has become exhausted, depleted, probably experiencing some level of depression, is a caregiver that's going to have difficulty adjusting to the daily events that take place with caregiving, such as helping a person that needs assistance with just simply getting dressed. And in addition, not just getting dressed, but getting dressed appropriately for the conditions, if it's winter or if it's summer. Some people live in extreme environments of heat or very cold, and an affected person who might wander away from the house in those conditions could quickly get into trouble physically. So a caregiver that is too frustrated, too worn out to assist with this process of just simply getting someone appropriately dressed is going to put that affected person at risk. I can give you one example from a real event from a memory disorder clinic where I worked, and it was caregiver, husband and wife. The husband had some severe impairment with the dementia, and they were both in the kitchen. He was opening a drawer and found a big butcher knife in it and looked at her and said, "Well, I guess now I'll have to kill you." And her response was to use a distraction technique as a caregiver. And she knew that one of the favorite things that her husband would always stop for was ice cream. And so she just said, "Okay, but first let's have some ice cream." And his response was, "Okay," puts the knife down, and it never was brought up again. So caregivers have acute situations they have to respond to, as well as some things that are not quite as dramatic as that, but nonetheless require a proper response.
Sure. It's sometimes a different kind of reasoning. And I think one phrase that has definitely helped a lot of caregivers about responding to your person of, you know, you're lying to the disease, not to the person. And that for a lot of people, especially in our tribal communities, that's a hard one because, you know, you are taught with these values of truth and you know, talking directly to them. And maybe that's something you've had a hard time wrapping your head around. But then once you started understanding, it takes a different mindset, then things started to open up. You can tell us about that by calling in. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. I think we're going to take a call. Let's go ahead and say hello to Gerald in Warm Springs, Oregon, tuned in to KWSO. Gerald, thank you for giving us a ring. You're on air.
Good morning.
Hello.
Nikhmatki. I was calling on behalf of my grandmother. And my sister did most of it, but I did some. But it was hard because sometimes she knew me and sometimes she didn't. She'd look at me if I walked into the home and she would say, "Who are you? What are you doing?" And then other times she would, you know, greet me like she always did. And then you have a hard time with bowel movements because they would, she would not know if she was urinating or not.
Sure. And Gerald, you know what? I think, you know, it's really a lot to take in, especially what you mentioned first on. That is one of the hardest things to handle when somebody you love, especially even your own mother, your own grandmother, and you look at them, you have no idea who you are. And this is what we're talking about all the things that come at you when you are trying to help a loved one who has dementia and the different phases that you go through. We're going to get a little bit into the physical part of it too, because that's something that a lot of people, it's new for them and trying to understand. And Blythe, I'm going to turn to you because it is hard to turn to your loved one and they're standing there saying, "Who are you?" This is something that caregivers need to understand is a phase of this. Blythe, go ahead. Gerald, thank you for giving us a call there in Warm Springs.
Yes, thank you, Gerald. And, you know, I've heard so many times the same struggles because especially, you know, if it's your grand.
Oh, boy, looks like we might have lost them. Blythe, let's see if we can get them back. Let's see if Neil's still here. Neil, go ahead, pick up.
Yes. Yes, this issue of the caregiver and the circumstance of the first time not being recognized and just the entire shift that can be observed with the affected person is manifest sometimes, and the Alzheimer's Association had a poster out that was a series of pictures of the affected person. The first one was very sharp and clear, and as you moved across the frame, the person became foggier and foggier until you really couldn't see them. And the caption was, "Alzheimer's disease, the long goodbye." And so part of the coping with this condition comes from another one of our caregivers. And she said about her husband that when she was having trouble at the moment and coping with his behaviors, that she would imagine that he had a big, huge white gauze bandage wrapped all around his head. And that was a symbolic reminder to her that forgetting who she was or behaving in ways that were risky and that she was having to constantly monitor was due to this condition and certainly had nothing to do with any sort of coordinated or a strategic effort on the husband's part to cause her a difficulty. The emotional pain and suffering of the caregiver is one that means that at least two things. One, that respite care is appropriate, and yet with the high value placed on elders across Indian country, that high value may actually make the caregiver even more reluctant to admit that they're worn out or that they're angry. And so they have to be given permission and encouraged to take care of themselves. And then secondly, it could well be that they may benefit from some mental health assistance, whether it's from a tribal healer or from physicians or both. These are things that caregivers need to really recognize.
Sure. And it seems like it is a series of, you know, checking in even with yourself because the work is, there's a lot of it. There's a lot of it ahead. And sometimes that's what we put before, or all the things that you know need to get done to help your person. There's a lot. And so I think even maybe right now, maybe today is your reminder. It's time to check in with yourself and maybe realign or the, some of those tips of being organized. And, you know, what does it take? And what happens when things get so overwhelming and there's nobody else stepping up to say, I'm here to help you too? Any thoughts, anything you want to share? 1-800-996-2848 is the number. This is Native America Calling. And we're going to continue here. Blythe, I know we lost you, but any thoughts you want to add?
Yes, I apologize for that. I just wanted to mention that, you know, it was brought up the issue kind of with bowel movements and things like that. And a lot of this happens as the disease progresses, that you have more trouble with daily activities from eating to dressing to bathing to toileting. But I also want to mention that if something like this happens, you know, suddenly and it's a very dramatic change in behavior from how the person was, it's really important to make sure that you take your family member, you know, friend, whoever, to be evaluated, because there are lots of things that can cause these unmet needs and behaviors. You know, if the person has pain, if they're constipated, if a medication has been changed. So just make sure that if it's something, you know, that's of a fairly rapid onset and is new, that you get an evaluation to make sure there isn't anything reversible or something that could be changed to help get the person back to their baseline.
And Blythe, is there anything you want to share about knowing your environment too, or just considering that your person may not even know where they are, even if they're in their own home? And how sometimes just even giving that reminder, you know, this is where the bathroom is. Sometimes people don't think about that because you're thinking of them 20 years ago when they knew and could maintain. Any thoughts like that on just maneuvering or even navigating some of this? Just reminding them, you know, some of the most obvious things that maybe they have forgotten. Anything, Blythe?
So that is exactly right what you're saying. So in terms of, you know, how you knew the person before, it does take a different mindset. And as we're younger, we want to have as many choices as we can, right? But if you're an older person with dementia, too many choices can be overwhelming. It can cause you to get agitated, to yell out, to be frustrated. So even, knowing that it's better to keep it simple and maybe provide just two choices. You know, for dinner, do you want spaghetti or chicken, rather than naming multiple things? Because even something like that could cause someone with dementia to feel overwhelmed and to express some kind of behavior, you know, that's unusual for them. Same applies, you're absolutely right, reminders about where things are, scheduled toileting even when they have problems with that, making sure that things are in very bright color contrast, which allows people to see things of dementia, not approaching them from the back to startle them because they don't have the visual capabilities they did before. So all of these are different environment things, as well as keeping a regular routine. Changing the routine constantly can also be overwhelming and cause behaviors.
All right, thank you for that. And let's talk a little bit more about agitation, because that one too is a hard one to handle when, you know, your person is really frustrated and they're saying things that, you know, you might be taking personally. But how do you maneuver through this? Folks, ask your question too. Maybe there are thoughts that you are having, or this reminds you of caring for a loved one. How did you get through the hard times? Give us a call. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. Blythe, let's talk a little bit about agitation and how do you cope with it as a caregiver?
So the first thing is something that I've already mentioned, that you want to make sure there hasn't been any kind of change in the routine or something that could be causing the agitation. Is the person bored? Are they getting enough sleep? Have they developed an eyesight or hearing problem? Is there a new medication? Are you in unfamiliar surroundings? Are they picking up on your nonverbal cues? Maybe you're having a very bad day. You're stressed out. You're frustrated. People with dementia can feel that. They are very in tune with nonverbal cues. Are they frustrated because you're asking them to do something that they don't know how to do anymore? Is it that they, you know, have changes in the environment that they're not comfortable with? There are lots of small children around. All of these are things that can cause that agitation. So the first thing is kind of evaluating what's been going on, you know, in the home with the routines to make sure that there's not something that could be changed or something that you can identify that's causing that, because a lot of times that can be changed and make things much better fairly quickly. For example, if it's sleep, then we can do something to that.
Sure. All right, we're going to continue here. 1-800-996-2848 right after this break. But you can join us too. We are talking with folks out of Cherokee, North Carolina, as well as hearing from more expertise coming out of Duluth, Minnesota. Ask your question, share your thoughts. 1-800-996-2848 is the number.
Support by New Mexico Community Capital, bringing the tools for success to emerging Native American enterprises, including programs in financial literacy and business basics, with micro-lending available to early-stage Native-owned businesses. Information at neirprogram.org or 505-924-2820. New Mexico Community Capital, helping make the impossible possible.
You're tuned in to Native America Calling. I'm your host, Tara Gatewood, and we are talking about caregiving for people with dementia today. Specifically, we're talking about the importance of caregivers getting the support and help they need to provide safe, healthy caregiving. And there is still time to get in on the conversation. The number is 1-800-996-2848. With us today is Dr. Neil Henderson. He is the Executive Director of the Memory Keepers Medical Discovery Team at the University of Minnesota Medical School. Also on the line is Dr. Blythe Winchester. She is a Chief Clinical Consultant in Geriatrics at the Palliative Care at the Indian Health Service. Thank you both for being here with us. And we are looking forward to hearing what other people are thinking in Native America call, or Native America too. Just join us. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. I wanted to just also throw this in there because we know a lot of times caregiving begins, and then there comes that critical time of deciding, you know, is it time to, you know, take our loved one to a memory care facility or maybe even a nursing home? There's a lot of questions that come with that, and I just want to open that up some. Blythe, go ahead and take us there. You know, when do you get to that point where you need to consider maybe this is that time?
So I have this talk quite often, and I'll tell people that the most common reasons for deciding to transition someone to a different care environment are when wandering is occurring, the person has incontinence, so they're leaking, you know, bowel or urine, or they're having falls. So you can see that a lot of it kind of revolves around safety. And so that's kind of the discussion, you know, that I'll have is when safety becomes an issue or the person needs 24/7 care and that can't be provided from within the home, then it's important to start seeing what your other options are. And unfortunately, we don't have very many tribal skilled nursing facilities in the country. There is a website online for Unite, which is a tribal nursing home collaborative. And you can find that if you search, you know, CMS Unite Nursing Homes. There's a lot of information about tribal skilled nursing facilities on that site, as well as some best practices that occur within those facilities. But it's important when you're looking around at the facilities in your area that you make sure that you take a tour and you meet with someone there, because each one is different, the culture of each one is different, and you want to make sure you find the place that's right for your loved one. And the staff there will be able to help you understand if your family member needs a more secure unit in a place like, for example, our facility, which has a memory care unit, or if they don't need that exact level of care. But this transition can be extremely difficult, so it's important that you also work with your healthcare team and get support throughout that process, because it's just as hard on the caregiver as it is, you know, for the person who's making that transition.
All right. Thank you for that. We got calls we're going to bring in now. Again, join us 1-800-99-NATIVE. Let's say hi to Jesse in Clayton, Washington, tuned in on KPBZ. Jesse, thank you for giving us a ring. Go ahead. You're on air.
Thank you so much for having me today. I'm a home care aide. And I enjoy Native America Calling anyways, but I appreciate that you're speaking on a topic that really affects a number of different parts of my life. And I had a question for the experts on the show while I've got a chance to talk to you. I have a handful of clients with dementia, and I feel like queuing, like you were just talking about on the show, can be a big part of the daily routine, trying to go through hygiene tasks and make sure that they do all the things that they need to do in order to be caring for themselves. But they also have this memory of the way that they were and the capabilities that they have. And sometimes they react like I'm henpecking them. They tell me to leave them alone. And I wonder if you have any suggestions or tools for walking the fine line between being as helpful as you can and sort of accidentally infantilizing your clients.
Jesse, thank you for giving us a ring. I'm glad you're asking this. Neil, anything for Jesse?
That's a very good question, and one that is exactly the kind of vexing issues that caregivers deal with all the time, because you are very much needed to help provide the safety for the person and all of the things that they need. And that requires a lot of interaction. And because the caregiver can't always know just what the person needs at that moment, assuming that the affected person is not able to articulate that, describe that in words very well anymore, that there's a little bit of trial and error that goes on. And one of the observations that you might be able to make is to see and sort of test in real time just what their capability is at the stage that they are in, because it will, of course, continue to change. And it may mean that for one person, they can still enjoy some reading, some basic reading. And so cueing then doesn't need to be done so much verbally to tell them to do something as you might put a sign, a note on the stove, don't touch, or a note on the bathroom door, bathroom. Those are possibilities too. However, for someone who is more cognitively affected, it may be that engaging them when there is a agitated reaction, engaging them in a pleasant activity, and there are lists of pleasant activities that caregivers can go to. And part of it then is to find out the history of what did this person like to do, and match that up with what they still like to do. And it's a really good question, just because agitation in the person is often not so much just within them. It's a reaction to the environment around them, maybe the caregiver's actions, or it could be that things are too noisy and it's confusing. And the degree to which the caregiver can identify what these problem inputs are and then move those out, eliminate those, is going to relate to how contented this person, the affected person, may become. And this is probably also a good time to say there is not always a perfect answer to the challenges that the caregivers receive.
All right. Thank you for that, Neil. Got another caller. We're going to say hi to Jamie in Santa Fe, New Mexico. Jamie, thanks for calling. You're on air.
Hello. I'm an emergency physician at Christus St. Vincent, and I take care of everybody. So I take care of Native Americans, as well as immigrants, as well as travelers through town, as well as longstanding Norteños. And I have a 93-year-old mother who's living in Florida, and I have two siblings, and we all take turns rotating through her assisted living residence to try to keep her going forward. One thing I wanted to bring up is the value of music. And I have found, as my mother's memory faculties have declined, much as Oliver Sacks, the neurologist and famous author, has written about, oftentimes when she can't remember what she did yesterday, she will remember the words to songs from the 1940s that she used to dance to, you know, World War II vintage music. And I would think that there may be some of that also, especially in World War II veterans. They'll remember the Tommy Dorsey Band or songs that they may have danced to or sung in their past. And I think in a time of agitation, music has a calming effect if it's familiar, if it's not hip-hop and contemporary pop, but something from their past, and perhaps even, you know, ceremonial dance recordings may be of comfort as well. So I just wanted to bring up, you know, think about music as you're trying to calm yourself as well as your loved one.
All right. Can't forget about that. Jamie, thank you for your call there in Santa Fe. We now go to Ellen in Albuquerque, New Mexico, listening in on KUNM. Ellen, thanks for calling. You're on air.
You bet. No problem. I just wanted to say, my mom has dementia too, and she's in a facility. My sister goes and helps out doing a lot of the bulk of the caregiving out, you know, aside from what they're doing over there. But what I've noticed when we were taking care of My husband's first wife, Jenny, she was totally blind, and she read quite a bit. It's funny how you were talking about reading. She would read magazines like the Reader's Digest and stuff like that and try to keep her brain active. And my thing is you keep them doing, trying to keep them doing as much for themselves as possible. But it's tough. It is really, really tough. And then we saw on NPR the other day where this one lady, she was talking about when she would look in the mirror and she could not recognize herself. And that, to me, is the scariest thing. I still can't get that out of my head.
You know, getting to that point with understanding the different stages of dementia and some of the things that maybe your person may be going through, it goes back to that education part. And, you know, we're talking about go get education, but maybe somebody's sitting out there saying, okay, well, then where? Ellen, thank you for your call here in Albuquerque. Neil, any places, resources? I know you talked about a guide earlier, but go ahead, share folks. This is where you can go to get more information.
Yes, a very good place to go is the Alzheimer's Association website. That has information that at many different levels, and it's very comprehensive, and it's kept up to date as well. I would also mention that Dave Baldridge with the International Association of Indigenous Aging has identified and helped to build for the Association of State and Territorial Health Officials. That's ASTHO. Go to that website, ASTHO, for posters, flyers, radio, public service announcements, videos, physician cards, and articles in Indian Country Today about dementia. And that is a fairly new opportunity that's out there. There's also, from the Alzheimer's Association and the Healthy Brain Initiative, the brand new roadmap for Indian Country. And Dave Baldridge, Mike Splain, and Molly French from the Alzheimer's Association have assisted with putting that roadmap together on dementia specifically for Indian Country. That's going to be talked about in Albuquerque at the National Indian Health Board that's running May 12 through 17. So those are some very new things. I also want to mention that the need for better understanding of the cultural parts of living with and experiencing dementia across Indian Country is something that needs much more work. And here at Memory Keepers, Dr. Kristen Jacklin has a research grant from the National Institute on Aging in collaboration with the Red Lake Nation and Grand Portage and soon a third tribal community to ask the questions about, tell us how you see this process of dementia. Tell us what should be done. Describe to us how you see this affecting your lives in cultural terms, because Dr. Jacklin and her team, Dr. Melissa Blind and Dr. Wayne Worry and others, are building on work they did with First Nations in southern Canada, where their description of dementia departs hugely from the medical model that we are all very familiar with, to include matters of dementia seen as a path or a journey, and a journey that expands rather than contracts over time, more of a transition than a failure that has a tragic ending.
And when you do get that kind of view, I think a lot of things change, especially thinking about a cultural context. And you know what? Discussions definitely are. They're just kicking off on some of this throughout our Native nations, and people know there's need for a whole lot more. Neil, thank you for sharing those resources. And folks, if there's anything you missed in the hour, you can always find this program in our archives on our website, NativeAmericaCalling.com. We are close to the end of the hour. We've got about a minute or so before we start wrapping things up. Blythe, any final comments? I know there's plenty more to cover in this when we talk about caregivers, especially healthy caregivers of persons with dementia. Anything you want to share, Blythe?
I just want to thank everyone who called in because your perspectives are so important and you bring up very valuable points. Music therapy we use all of the time as a recommendation. There's even a home program called SingFit that you can look up for use of at-home music therapy. It doesn't have to be that complicated. You can use just music that's familiar to the person. It's often very calming and induces happy memories, provides reminiscence, and can be super useful in that redirection tactic that Neil mentioned before. And another caller mentioned staying productive, and this is so important because we have people who have severe dementia, but as long as they have a task, if they can fold towels and we can provide those same towels later and they can fold them again, it's very important to keep someone as productive as they can be in that state of their dementia. And I think that whole issue of recognizing yourself or not in the mirror brings up the issue that a lot of the issues that occur, behaviors with dementia patients, are more upsetting and disconcerting to us than the patient, his or herself. So sometimes it's a matter of working yourself through what it is that your family member is doing, because that person may not be as upset or affected by the behavior that he or she is experiencing. And I think that's important to remember, too.
All right. Thank you for that, Dr. Blythe Winchester. Also, thanks to Dr. J. Neil Henderson for also sharing your knowledge with us. Of course, thank you to our callers. And maybe you just listened in, but this affects your life in a big way. We appreciate you giving us your time and to send you a lot of good thoughts. And you can even comment, too. Maybe it feels more comfortable to send us an email. Go for it. comments@nativeamericacalling.com. I'm your host, Tara Gatewood. Join us again tomorrow.
Support by the law offices of Sanofsky Chambers, Saxe, Miller, and Monkman, a national tribal rights law firm with offices in Washington, D.C., New Mexico, California, and Alaska, and online at www.sanofsky.com.
Support by Canyon Records, producer of Native American music, including R. Carlos Nakai's million-selling Canyon Trilogy. All Canyon titles available from iTunes, Amazon, Google Play, and CanyonRecords.com.
Yad e, nlbehoz anish dibitsin ishtlijin lenegi American Indians do unda iya Alaska Native zige iya diit za Allah ko iya Hepatitis C wal yehege iya bidahadil neh ko iya ad e binna idil ki do leil adon da iya bini yeh nandit ol kato bini yeh nahat ol neil naida ki da nahol no iya Medicare.gov eido da iya anagay za el agent dal nishi da iya sat nabit dil kil. A message from the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico, by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service. Music is by Brent Michael Davids. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.